Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Text 57.
Yar savatra nabhasnehas. Tat prapya shubha shubham. Nabi nandati nadveshti. Tasya pragya pratishtata. Yasarvatra nabhasnehas. Tat prapya shubha shubham. Nabi nandati nadveshti. Tasya pragya pratishtata. Ya sarvatra nabhasnehas. Tat prapya shubha shubham. Nabi nandati nadveshti. Tasya pragya pratishtata.
Anyone else?
Yasarvatra nabhasnehas. Tat prapya shubha shubham.
pragya pratishtita.
Tasya pragya pratishtita.
Ya sarvat prana vinas nihas.
Ya sarvat prana vinas nihas.
Tat tat pratya sukhasukam.
Tat tat pratya sukhasukam.
Nabhinandati naveste.
Yaha.
Yaha.
One who.
One who.
Sarvatra.
Sarvatra.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Anabishneha.
Anabishneha.
Without affection.
Without affection.
Tat.
That.
Tat.
That.
That.
Prapya.
Prapya.
Achieving.
Shubha.
Shubha.
Good.
Good.
Ashubham.
Ashubham.
Evil.
Evil.
Na.
Never.
Never. Abhinandati.
Abhinandati.
Praises.
Praises.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Dveshti.
Dveshti.
Envies.
Envies.
Tasya.
Tasya.
His.
His.
Pragya.
Pragya.
Perfect knowledge.
Perfect knowledge.
Pratishtata.
Pratishtata.
Fixed.
Fixed.
Purport and his and translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Purport. There is always some upheaval in the material world which may be good or evil. One who is not agitated by such material upheavals, who is unaffected by good and evil, is to be understood to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one is in the material world, there is always the possibility of good and evil, because this world is full of duality. But one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is not affected by good and evil, because he is simply concerned with Krishna, who is all good absolute. Such consciousness in Krishna situates one in perfect transcendental position called technically samadhi. Om agyanta mirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshunun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakandhitamscha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turu Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare I beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words be aligned with Guru Parampara. May our consciousness also be aligned. And may this be for the pleasure of Shri Shri Radha Shamsundar. And may all the devotees be benefited by hearing Bhagavad Gita. So again, this is chapter 2 from the Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized, text 57. I'll read again. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur before him, they entitled this second chapter Contents of the Gita Summarized, because it's like a concise view of the whole Gita in the second chapter. All the different yogas are there. Karma Yoga. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. This is like steps in a staircase. And the highest platform is Bhakti. But actually you begin with Karma Yoga. Why to begin there? Because it's said that we're karmatmika. We're born in this world. Our minds are colored by karma. So there has to be some way. What that means is that we're very self-centered. We're thinking to do things for my own benefit, to avoid what's my disadvantage. And in this way we're absorbed in what's good and bad for me. This is the karmic mentality. So there's a yoga. If you have that mentality, there must still be a way of linking with the Supreme. So karma yoga. Instead of doing things just for yourself, you start to do things from a sense of duty. This is my sacred duty, the work that I have, the position I have as father, mother, employee, whatever it may be. You take it very responsibly and you perform your duty best you can. So that's part of Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga has many different components. That's one in Dharma. One follows this Dharma. And one also begins to do things for the sake of the Supreme. That's what makes it yoga, Karma Yoga. You dedicate, you know, say you work very hard, you're detached from the results, but money's coming because you're doing your duty well, so naturally something comes. And then you use that money. You use what comes to you also for the Supreme. This is called Karma Yoga. And then by doing that, this is interesting, by living in that way, that detached way from the results, then one becomes more receptive to transcendental knowledge, Jnana Yoga. One starts to be able to discriminate between matter and spirit. That's how, I'll read a little something Prabhupada describes this second chapter in the very first verse. He says, this chapter, the second chapter, instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. So you only get the realization of you being a spiritual being when you can act in this way of Karma Yoga, Prabhupada is saying. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results. Why? Because when you start to let go of doing just being goal-oriented for yourself, your mind, first it's tough because we're so conditioned to acting that way, so it's hard to give it up. But if you can act from a sense of duty, your mind actually becomes more calm and steady. It's not as passionate. I've got to get this for myself. I'm afraid of losing this. You start to get a steady mind, and with a steady mind, when you hear spiritual knowledge, then it can actually land in your consciousness and not be disrupted by the mode of passion. So anyway, so this is a staircase. Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga. And then what is the culmination of Jnana Yoga? It's Bhakti. Because Krishna says, Jnanavan Mam Prapadyante. When finally one becomes complete in knowledge, when they're finally a possessor of true knowledge, what do? Prapadyante. Then they surrender unto me with love. So this second chapter will give an overview. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and there's also, Prabhupada says, a touch of Bhakti also in the second chapter. In this section that we're reading now, this today's verse, this is a section of the second chapter which is describing a state of consciousness which is called Stitta Pragya. Krishna mentions this Stitta Pragya. And Arjuna, when he hears it, he becomes very interested to know more. Stitta Pragya means, Stitta means steady or fixed or situated. And Pragya can mean a few things. It can mean intelligence or consciousness or knowledge. So a state of consciousness where you're perfectly fixed in intelligence, higher intelligence. So when Arjuna hears this, Stitta Pragyasya, he says, I want to hear more about this. How does this person act? How does this person respond to life? How does this person speak? And then Krishna, one by one, he answers all those questions. Arjuna is very interested to hear about this higher level of consciousness. We should be very interested in hearing this. Right? We're on an ordinary level of consciousness. Everybody in this world, it's more or less the same, just different degrees of material consciousness. But then we hear about another state of consciousness, which is about beyond duality. We should be attracted to that. We should ask questions about that. How do I experience that? Just like Arjuna is. There's a law that exists. Unless you can't bring anything into existence unless you can first conceive of that thing. You know? This is in the realm of consciousness I'm talking about. If you have no interest in such things, if you don't want to know about a higher level of consciousness, then just by that fact, you'll always stay on the same level of consciousness. Because it begins with the conception of it. I have to conceive. I have to first believe it's a possibility. This is really worth meditating on, because, you know, sometimes we're in a negative state. You know, you ever have that for a long period of time? You just somehow, it's like a cloud. You just enter this negative state. If we think while we're in that negative state that this is simply inevitable, it's just what it is, and there's no way out. By that consciousness, you can't get out. But if something in you says, there must be something else, there must be some other possibility, there must be some way out, then that just begins to crack open the door of a change. So we can't achieve anything unless we can first conceive of it. So Arjuna, this Stitta Pragya, this state of consciousness, which is beyond duality. How? What? How does a person act? How do they live? What do they do? What do they say? So we should hear, we should want to hear this and think, how do I experience that? All of us were here because we've had maybe flashes. Some have had, maybe I've only had flashes, maybe some of you have had more, but some flash or some experience of that possibility. Like many of you here have had the privilege of associating with Srila Prabhupada. So here's a person. Maybe you weren't even looking for spiritual life, but something about Prabhupada and the way he speaks, there's something different. There's some higher knowledge. There's some higher emotion. And that gave you faith that it actually exists. And now because you're forming a conception of it, now you're also on that path. So the association of devotees is so important because they give us an experience. Something in us recognizes that this is actually possible. And that's what opens the door for us to walk that same path. But if you're a person that says from the very beginning, I don't believe it, as many people do, that won't allow them to ever experience it. So it just goes to show that there has to be something inside of us that really wants to know, that stays a little bit open. If that door is a little bit open, then eventually we can walk through it. But if I think I'm only this, so this is now relevant. There's another verse I wanted to read. I looked up a few verses that are about praise and criticism, because that's what this verse is about. There's another verse also describing this, that if you think that you're this body, all you are is this body and this mind, then that conception, that way of living, we have to remain there always. We'll never get beyond it, because it's something, it's a deep conception we're holding on to. There's nothing expansive. There's no courage to soar above that state of consciousness. If you just think it is what it is, this is what I am, this is who I am, then one will be stuck there. I trap myself with that consciousness. With that consciousness, I trap myself there. Here's another verse from the Bhagavatam about this. The seventh canto, where Shukadev Goswami says, the conditioned soul, being in the bodily conception of life, considers his body to be his self and considers everything in relationship with this body to be his. Because he has this wrong conception of life, he is subjected to dualities like praise and chastisement. So praise and chastisement, we're subject to it so long we think I'm this body and mind. It shows you that whatever your philosophy is about yourself, that determines your reality. This is why Prabhupada was so heavy with scientists, because their conclusion of the self is what? That we come from chemicals. There's some chemical reaction, and emerging from that is you and me. So if we think the origin of me is chemicals, what will I ever achieve? I'll just be a mixture of chemicals. I just accept that. I'm nothing greater. There's nothing divine about me. And so there's my life. That's all. Some people say we're nothing more than animals. If you think you're simply an animal, that's all you ever be. Some people say we're rational animals. That's a little better. So I'm an animal, but I have a rationality. So those people can cultivate the rational self. But if you understand, I'm actually a divine being. I'm a spirit, part and parcel of God. With that idea of the self, now what's possible? Now I move towards that. And that will give me the experience of that. So we all have a philosophy, even people who think they're not philosophical. They believe one of these things. And that determines what they'll be, what they can be. So it requires some courage. If we don't have the experience ourselves of a higher state of consciousness, then at least we should have some courage to explore that. And we should want to know about it. Now, when Arjuna, he asks about this person, Stitta Pragya, who has this steady consciousness, one question he asks is, how does he speak? And this verse that we're reading today is the answer to that. This is how he speaks. It's basically saying here, he doesn't praise so-called good, and he doesn't despise so-called bad. What is his attitude? Anabhi sneha. He has no emotion towards these things. He has no affection for these things. He has no attachment. Right? Sneha means attachment or affection. He doesn't have that towards the so-called good and bad of this world. Tasya pragya pratishtata. That is that person who, living in that way, is fixed in this perfect intelligence. So in other words, how does he speak? He doesn't speak much because he's not praising anything that's good, materially good, and he's not despising anything. So he's kind of silent. Right? We get very into that, praising what we think is good, despising, criticizing what we think is bad. We get very excited about those things. The whole world, that's what we're talking about. That's what we're into. There's judgments. Constantly judging. The mind is constantly judging. But if you're on a higher level of consciousness, you have no affection for those things. And therefore you say very little. So how does he speak? He doesn't speak much. These verses are not about the pure devotee, by the way. They're about, you know, Stitta Pragya, this consciousness on the way to pure devotion, which is one becomes neutral towards so-called good and bad of this world. Here's another verse from the Bhagavatam about this. A saintly sage sees with equal vision and therefore is not affected by that which is materially good or bad. Although he observes others performing good and bad work and speaking properly or improperly, the sage does not praise or criticize anyone. So this person, he sees what's good and bad. It's not that he's just dumb and he can't make distinctions. Or it's not that he's ignoring it even, so-called good and bad. He sees it. But still, he doesn't praise or criticize anyone because of a higher level, a higher vantage point in which he's looking down. He sees more than the average person, and therefore he can let go of the so-called good and bad of this world. If we see nothing else above that, then we're so absorbed in those things, and we're always passing judgment. So it may seem like this person with this consciousness is very unemotional, right? It says, anabhisneha, that he has no emotion towards these things. So, but Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he clarifies that this person has one emotion that's still there, even though all these material emotions are, he's beyond that. But he still has one emotion of mercifulness. There's a feeling of when you see that people are absorbed in the so-called good and bad of the world, there's actually a feeling of compassion, of mercy, that they are trapped in those dualities, going back and forth. Everyone is judging in their own way from their own lens. We all have a conditioned mind. It's a lens that we see things. And everybody thinks they're objective. But nobody's objective. It's all subjective. We all have a little color to our lens that's a little bit different from someone else. And so we say, this is right, someone disagrees. We say, this is good, someone disagrees. No, I think that's bad. And in this way we argue endlessly. So when a devotee, when someone on a higher level of consciousness sees this interaction, sees all this happening, he feels compassion. That they are trapped in those dualities, and yet there's something so much more that's possible. There's another verse about praising and blaming. This is also 7th canto, 13th chapter, 42nd verse. This verse is spoken by, he's known in the Bhagavatam as the Python Brahmana. A Brahmana who's just lying there, very advanced, and Prahlad Maharaj actually sees him, and Prahlad Maharaj can understand this is a very advanced soul, and he starts a conversation with him. And this is what he says about this duality of praise and blame. He says, different people are of different mentalities, therefore it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping that they will agree to become one with the Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that same idea, he's seeing this and he's feeling compassion. So he says, it's not my business to criticize people, to constantly praise and criticize. It's not my business. We make, you know, others our business. We're constantly looking and judging. Actually, we judge people. Why do we judge people so harshly? What's actually happening is we're escaping from that same thing that's in my heart that I don't want to acknowledge. Whatever I hate in a person or criticize, it's also in me. But because I'm not looking there, I don't want to acknowledge it, I don't want to accept it, then it creates a tension, a frustration, and when we see it outside of ourselves, we attack it. So we're escaping this self-reflection. So this, you know, criticism is due to a lack of self-knowledge. If you truly look in your heart, if you're constantly looking in your heart sincerely, day after day, day after day, you'll see that whatever I dislike in others is also in me. So how can I treat them so harshly when it's also in me? So we don't reflect that way. We're always looking very external. But if we look internal, we'll see that everything that's in anybody is also a possibility within me. You see the worst crime, you know, you turn on the news, you hear about some terrible crime. How could a person do that? But we don't have the realization that I could also do that. If I make certain choices, the desire, there are tendencies there, and if I water those, they're like seeds in the heart. So many seeds are there, just sitting in the heart. I can go in this direction, that direction. The person who does something terrible, they've come in contact with one of those seeds, and they've cultivated it by thoughts, they've indulged in it, they've increased it, and therefore it comes as a result, something terrible happens. But I could do that too. I'm not beyond that. And also when we see people do very special things, very good things, when we see a pure devotee we should also know that seed is in me too. Anybody who's ever done anything shows us that you can also either do that. You can also do that. Anything that's ever been done is also a possibility within us. If it's cultivated, it may take a long time. Because we all have the same existential condition that we're in. So when we just judge others and don't look and judge, we should be looking at ourselves and seeing what's there. There's so much time, there's so much that can be done in that direction. But we avoid it and we go out. Our eyes look outward and we criticize. And that prevents us from suffering usefully. There's also useful suffering. If you see something in yourself that you weren't aware of before, you may suffer a little. That's a good suffering. You may think, like, I remember this time when I was living in New York in the ashram there. My service after the morning program, every morning for many, many years, was to clean the temple. Just clean the whole temple. And, you know, sweeping, mopping, and just going, picking up things, cleaning underneath. So I did that for a long time. Finally, there was another brahmacharya who joined, and it was a lot to do every day, you know, so I was doing it every day. So then we split it between me and him. So I remember that whenever it was his day to do it, he would complain. You know, he would kind of like drag his feet doing it, and people, okay, it's Tuesday, I don't feel like doing this. And I remember that was bothering me so much. I thought, this devotee, in my mind, I was thinking, he's so lazy. I was thinking, so lazy, criticizing in my mind. And I was thinking, I'm not like that. I just get up, do my duty every day. And then one day, I had the realization that when I was observing my own mind, when it was my day to clean, I actually had the same resistance, the same reaction, but I wouldn't speak it out. You know, he would speak it out. He would tell anybody, even the temple, you know, who was in charge of the temple would say, hey, clean. They say, do I have to do it? Let me do it tomorrow. No, do it now. You know, so he would speak that he didn't want to do it. I wouldn't speak it, but I felt the same thing. In a sense, I started to realize, actually, he's better than me. I was criticizing him for being lazy, but actually he's better because he's making it clear and I'm hiding it. So we're both lazy. We're both struggling with laziness. But I pretend I'm not and I hide it and I just put on a nice face and I do what I'm going to do. He would be more upfront and obvious, straightforward about it and say, I don't want to do this. So in one sense, he was more honest than me. Once I realized that actually this devotee, for so long I've been criticizing my mind for being lazy, he's actually better than me. Then all the criticism and the anger towards him and the frustration, it was like neutralized. It was gone. See, this is the power. When you realize that you have the same thing in you that you criticize in another, it almost neutralizes the tendency to criticize. And everything we see is like that. Whatever we see outside of us is also inside of us. This will give us the ability to tolerate others, to forgive others. I forgave him. It was like it was gone. All the frustration with him was gone. I always remember thinking, how could this person be so lazy? And then I woke up one day and realized, I'm the lazy one, and he's just more honest about it. Also, when you don't forgive people, when you hold resentment towards anyone, you bind yourself to that person. Because resentment, hatred, is a binding. It has a binding power, just like love does. Right? Actually, Bhagavatam says there's three things. Three emotions are very, very absorbing and bind you to what you're absorbed in. What are those three emotions? Love. If you truly love, therefore we want to love Krishna, because if you truly love Krishna, you're bound to Krishna. But love is it binds you to a person, right? What else binds you? Hate binds you to a person. Think about it. You're constantly thinking, I hate this person. It's an absorption. You see them, that comes up. You're bound. You know, if you resent, let's say, your parents, right? It says in the Bible, honor your mother and father. That's actually a very deep principle, because if there's a deep resentment. No matter how far away you move, you're still linked, you're still bound. Next life, there's a connection because of hatred, because hatred is so strong. It ties you to the person. What's another one? So Bhagavatam says three things especially. Love, hate. Anyone know the third? This is from Narada Muni. Think of another emotion that's very...
Fear?
Yes, fear. When you fear something, how that absorbs your mind, right? Fear, very absorbing. You're very, very afraid of something happening. You're bound to it. It's almost causing it to happen just by the fear of being bound to it. Because if you're so afraid, the way the creation works is that it confronts you with it so you can finally overcome it. It brings it to you. If no fear, then there's no need for you to learn that lesson. But if you have strong fear, you're bound to that circumstance. So, love, hate, fear. You know, these are there are examples of these in connection to Krishna. Who is the example of those who actually have pure love for Krishna? The gopis of Vrindavan. Therefore, they're eternally bound to Krishna. Who's the example of one who hates Krishna, but because of it is bound to Krishna? Shishupal. And who's the example of fear? Kamsa. Kamsa. So afraid of Krishna. So that's the acharyas that describe. Therefore, that's also a kind of Krishna consciousness. Because Kamsa is so afraid of Krishna, he's always thinking of Krishna, so that's Krishna consciousness. But it's not the Krishna consciousness we follow. Because anukulyena, we want to follow what's favorable to Krishna, not be his enemy. But regardless, there's a certain value in any way that you become conscious of Krishna, even hate or fear. Because as we know, Shishupal and Kamsa also, some mercy came, even though they had the wrong motive, because it was Krishna they were absorbed in. So when you see that everybody, you know, that we all have whatever you see outside and other people, if you see that all of us are like in the same situation, then what's the conclusion of seeing everybody in this material world like that? Is that you start to feel that, wow, we are all just entrapped. We are all entrapped in this duality, criticizing each other, violence towards each other. Violence is not just physical violence. When you think harshly towards a person, that is also violence. You send something out. A thought is not nothing. You know, we think a thought is just something and just dissipates. I just think something and it's gone. No, a thought is an object. It has, you know, an effect. It has a form even. You know, just like sound, right? Sound is coming out of my mouth. It also has a form. It also goes a certain distance. That's why if you're far enough, you don't hear it, because it stops at some point. It's something that's sent out. So thoughts are more subtle than sound, but the same principle is there, that there's a form, there's an effect, it goes somewhere. There's certain yogis who are very advanced, they can send their thoughts very far, and that's why they can accomplish things from a far distance. Or a very pure devotee also can send a blessing. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can get that blessing if they send it, because they have that power. But the average person doesn't have that power. But still, your thoughts, your evil thoughts, your hateful thoughts directed towards a person actually has an effect. Not just on them, but on you. What is my consciousness? If I'm thinking hateful things, what am I creating in my own consciousness? So now, with this problem, seeing that all of us are imperfect and we're hurting each other in so many ways, we're exploiting each other in so many ways, now the goal for us is not to perfect ourselves. The goal is just to realize this, that I'm imperfect, and therefore I have to surrender myself. I have to surrender myself to Krishna. Not that I have to perfect myself. We get mad at ourselves because we're not perfect. The material mind is vimukha, it says. The material mind by its nature is averse to God. By its nature, it's averse to God. So it's not the material mind that finally, you know, I just make some adjustments or I work on myself and now I love God. No, you have to surrender that. You surrender to the Lord, realizing your imperfect state. I'm completely trapped. I can't get myself out of this situation. Therefore, I take shelter at the feet of Krishna. And then when Krishna's pleased with that consciousness, then he blesses you with a new vision to see the world. a way of seeing the world without any judgment, where you can actually be in this state that's being talked about here, where you can look at people and you see what's good and bad, you see what's happening, you're not blind, but you don't criticize, because you understand. Yeah, of course, this is the material world, this is material consciousness, the nature of material consciousness is to cause pain. Sometimes I'm exploiting others, sometimes I'm the one exploited. And that goes back and forth. This is material life. So knowing that, knowing I'm entrapped, others are entrapped, what else can I do? I surrender. Surrender is very deep. If we really grasp what surrender means, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, therefore, that when will that day come where I finally see what it means to surrender, and I completely surrender to the Lord, and that's the end of it. Now I'm fully under the divine energy of the Lord. We just transferred the energies that we're under. Material consciousness, there's a material energy, I'm under that energy, and I'm living from it, and I'm thinking from it, and I'm feeling from it. There's another energy with also feelings and thoughts, the divine energy. If I surrender myself to that, to Krishna, then I'm placed under that divine energy. And then you spontaneously have the vision of no judgment. It's not something we can do by our calculation, by an effort. We just have to realize we can't do it and then place ourselves under Krishna completely. Sharanagati. Therefore, there's a nice verse about this. And then we'll stop here and just open up for any thoughts or reflections or questions. This is a verse, very nice verse about overcoming good and bad in this world. How it's done, not by calculating. You see, we hear Bhagavad Gita, we hear the spiritual philosophy, and then we go out into the world and we're trying to remember it, right? It's like let me try to apply this. Is this good or is this bad? We're still judging. We're still trying to figure it out. We have to do that. That's where we are. That's where I am. So I do that. But when you're blessed by Krishna, finally, and His mercy descends into your heart, then you don't have to calculate anymore. Spontaneously, you know what is good, what is bad. So this verse therefore says, one who has transcended material good and evil automatically acts in accordance with the religious instructions and avoids forbidden activities. The self-realized person does this spontaneously like an innocent child, and not because he is thinking in terms of material good and bad. So just like a child, just a spontaneous, it's a new vision that's given to you. You're not constantly trying to remember the scripture. Right? Just look at Srila Prabhupada. We have to study the scripture. We have to try to learn it. We have to try to imbibe it, to take it in. We have to practice. But look at Srila Prabhupada. What is that state of consciousness? So he definitely did that throughout his life. But just give him a microphone. Just walk with him and record. Everything is just flowing from inside out. He's connected. He's linked to the super soul. He's linked to that divine energy where spiritual knowledge just flows, not as a memory from what I studied previously, but as a realization from within. Certain things we memorize, right? You use certain shlokas, certain stories, so that's there. But your own internal wisdom is awakened because of that connection to Krishna, and it flows out. Usually the way we learn is from the outside in. You go to school. Well, teach me something, teaching all these things, read these books, get it into my brain, jam it into my brain. What would it be like to live from wisdom? Doesn't come from studying different quotes from different philosophers, but it's actually there within you. And it comes out. You speak it. You share it. You understand according to time, place, and circumstance how to manifest that wisdom. And this verse is saying that comes spontaneously when one surrenders to Krishna. So this surrender is everything. Therefore, this is how the Gita culminates. Mame kam sharanam braja. He tells Arjuna so many things, Krishna. But finally he says, but just surrender unto me. And then that divine energy, we are moved now no longer by the material energy, but the divine energy. And what does it move you to do? It moves you to serve. You're no longer just, as I was saying in the beginning, karmatmika, considering your own advantage, avoiding your disadvantage, trying to get advantages. You're no longer moving from that energy. You're moving from the energy of service, seva vritti. All the other vrittis stop. Vritti means like a oscillation within the mind. There are so many vrittis, so many thoughts. And they're all self-absorbed thoughts. Think about yourself throughout the day. We're just thinking our own thoughts, our own feelings, our own desires. It's all self-absorption. Other people in my life, but we consider them in relation to me, is like the sun, and all the planets are revolving around the sun. So all these things in my life are actually revolving around me, my consciousness. Right? That's how we live. And all these vrittis are just about me. Once those are all taken away by surrender, they're gone, and now there's another vritti that's there in the soul. The soul has also a vritti, seva vritti, the vritti to serve, the tendency to lovingly serve the Lord. And then one is moved by that. So there's a lot to be said about this criticism, judgments, praising, criticizing. We want to be very careful, especially of criticism. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, there are two rules, do not praise and do not criticize. But of the two rules, the do not praise rule, devotees can actually not follow that. We praise each other, but we praise not to flatter or to, we're not like illusion seeing some material quality as the all in all. We don't praise because of that. We praise to encourage. Devotees praise each other. To encourage, to also bless. When an advanced devotee praises another devotee, it's like a blessing. It's uplifting. It's encouraging. There's gratitude. It's not for any other reason. So devotees praise. But, he says, there's two rules. Do not praise, do not criticize. The one you can avoid, you can break that rule. Do not praise, you can do that. But the rule, do not criticize, that is more important. Purvaviddhi, it's called. That is the more important rule. You have to be very careful with criticizing. There are many stories about that, but we'll stop here. So, anyone have any thoughts, reflections, comments, corrections? Yes, yes, people.
I was thinking regarding 10 offenses, the first offense is sixth division. Generally, we don't say it, but that's how it is.
Mm.
And in that six parts of the first offense, committing or criticizing the Vaishnavas who have dedicated their life for propagating the holy name, there is a gradation. Gradation is like if I maintain a hate with about someone, or I don't like that devotee or whatever, but I don't say it. I never like burst it out, or still there is a chance that I can purify that.
Mm.
But if I physically hurt that devotee because I hate him, it's too late.
Mm.
So there is a difference on the gradation.
Yeah.
But you say that you are holding it where the new guy or new devotee came, he bursted out or he spoke out, it's better. I'm trying to understand how is that.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, the example I gave was just a person saying, I don't feel like doing this. He wasn't necessarily criticizing devotees, right? The one I was mentioning, cleaning the floors. So he was honest about, I don't want to do this today. Not so bad, right? It's kind of like honest. It's maybe what we all feel and don't say. I was hiding it. He was more up straightforward. That's how I was seeing that. But like you're saying, in terms of criticism, this is a whole other category, right? This is the category of aparad. It's like another thing. It's a whole category in and of itself, which is very dangerous. And as you say, I would have to agree, if you actually speak it and hurt the heart of a devotee. This is like, you feel it, but now the words are like the seal. Like you seal it off. Like, you know, you may think something and not speak it, it's kind of there in your mind. But if you speak it, it's almost like the conclusion. It's put out there and the effect in the heart of a devotee. If you don't speak it, it's still bad. If you, right? If we're holding hatred, it's still going to have its effect. But there's something true to be said about that, Prabhu. That speaking it and hurting the heart of a devotee, even more dangerous. You know?
Another point I was thinking, you said the three emotions binds someone.
Yeah.
I was thinking Bhishma Dev and Duryodhan, they are both on the same party. And both fought against Pandavas and you can say Krishna also because he was charioteer. But Bhishma Dev says, love, definition of love, that not only loving the Lord, but also withdrawing resentment all the time. And one way he said he did it, this is in 1st Canto 9 chapter, by seeing him the only cure of all his problems. So love means also there has to be like a negative side. Like for an example, in the beginning you say Sthita Pragya. Sthita Pragya is not like I don't want to be judgmental or praising, or I have to be above before I do that, otherwise not possible to do it. Why people does this? Because they are not above.
Yeah.
Their level of consciousness is very low. So they always criticize or praise or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thank you, Guru. Yes.
Thank you for the great class. Yeah. I really like the topic about not criticizing or judging for the community of devotees. I found a verse in the Bible the other day that really hits home to this message.
Please.
And it helped me to draw the bridge, kind of seeing the same religion. This is from the New Testament, Matthew 5:23-24. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. I'm like, whoa, if there's an altar in the Bible, what's the deity in that altar? And why do Christians say there's no idol worship? You know, there can be an altar with no image or no form, just nothing. And how are you going to offer your gift to the altar as a Christian if there's no deity?
Yeah.
So I was like, they got to be talking about Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, we can totally relate, right? Bringing a gift to the altar. But that's very powerful, right? It's saying, if you're going to do that, but you hate your fellow man, or you have resentment, put down the gift and first go get right with them, and then Krishna will accept your gift. So if we're doing so many sweet things for Krishna, but we're criticizing devotees, and we have resentment towards devotees, is Krishna accepting that? That's a question. That's a good question to ask. So get right with the devotees, and then Krishna is pleased, and then he's more, you know, willing to accept your offering. Thank you, Guru. Yeah. Yes, Guru.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice class. Just a clarification, are there more than three that binds us other than the love, hate and fear?
You think about emotions, all emotions are binding in a sense, right? If you have greed, it's very powerful. Your mind is constantly thinking of something, which means if we die with those strong connections, then it means we have to take birth again and continue on. If it's strong enough, it has a momentum. It carries into the next life. So if we love someone in this material world, but in a material way, you know, a kind of clinging love that's not healthy, we're bound to that person again. Maybe another experience in the next life, another situation, we still have to now experience hatred, all those. So in one sense, all emotions, if you think about the emotions, anger, right? Another emotion, it's binding. I can't get this person out of my head, I'm so angry. But we don't see that these things not just are stuck in our minds, but they also stick us in that same situation, birth after birth. So therefore, one has to ultimately, at one point, one has to let go of, one has to forgive everyone. At one point. And again, it's not our just, you know, we don't have the power just to drop that. We need Krishna's grace. Therefore, that connection will make it possible. Okay, I think we should stop here. Question? Yes, Prabhu. Samar Prabhu. But especially the Bhagavatam says those three are very powerful. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for the wonderful class. You mentioned about the Python Man, like the very last thing he said, that he was wishing everyone becomes one with the Super Soul.
Yeah.
And it kind of threw my mind a little bit there. But then as you were speaking, and I don't know if this is the correct conclusion, but you said, just look at Srila Prabhupada, who's, you know, connected with the Super Soul and everything he was saying. So yeah. Is that what you...
That's the Krishna conscious way to see oneness with Super Soul. Means to be linked with the Super Soul, not that you actually become the Super Soul. Oneness with God means that you have love for God, you're connected to God. Just like two people, what is love when two people become one, in a sense, not literally, right? But we say that even in a material world, these two people have become one. Not literally, they're still two people, but one in their will, one in their affection. So the Python Man had some impersonal tendencies. He wasn't a pure devotee, from what I understand. You'll see other verses that are kind of display a little maybe impersonal. But the devotee's vision is to see that this is the real meaning of oneness with Super Soul. So, you know, I think if you read that section, you'll see certain verses that point to him not necessarily being a pure devotee, but being in very high spiritual consciousness. Like that. Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. Yes, yes, Mataji.
I was just wondering about the difference between, like, I understand we don't criticize and all, but you also have to make judgments sometimes about life, because otherwise it's kind of impersonal. You know, you can just be, okay, everything's good, everyone's perfect, it's my problem. But you also have to see, discriminate, that's the word, have discrimination to understand what is right and what is.
Yes,
not that you're blaming the person, because you're right. I could have been doing that, or I might do it in the future.
Yeah,
who knows?
True.
I find that myself. If I think sometimes about, oh, why did they do that? And then I find myself in that same, Krishna puts me there to see.
Well, you said it perfectly, that a devotee has very powerful discernment. It would be something like, you could say, like this verse says, anabhishnehas. Unemotional discernment. It's not personal or emotional. It's not something that I'm carrying with me that I hate this person or criticizing. I'm not dwelling on it. I'm not indulging in it. But I do see that this is wrong. And I can say it. But it's not so emotional. So this that verse itself has the answer to that question. Anabhishneha. Without emotion or attachment, but one still sees, one still discerns. So you can say, you could call it unemotional discernment as the way a devotee sees the material good and bad. He doesn't become blind and avoid it or irresponsible. He can see more than what others see. So, thank you.
What will bind me and what will liberate me? If that discriminating power is lost, devotee cannot progress.
Hmm.
So that has to be forefront.
Yeah.
This activity, this thought will liberate me. Yes, dwell on it. This thought, this activity will bind me. No.
Yep.
So, like that. That's very nice.
Absolutely. Thank you, Boo. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Hare Krishna.